Chapter 10, Nighttime Mischief. The rest of the day was spent trying to find time to nonchalantly check some of the 22 targeted locations. It was difficult. Once Dilly believed Dodd's insights, she insisted on caution, reminding Dodd and Boot that the less people who knew, the better, though they agreed that they could let Buck and Sonny in on their secret. Other people, especially the guest trainers and experts, had to know nothing of the covert investigation. When their daytime attempts to search failed, Dodd, Dilly, Sonny, Boot, and Buck unanimously decided to sneak down to the basement of the castle late at night. It was their only chance to check it unnoticed, and of all the possibilities, the castle's lowest corridor seemed to fit Dodd's descriptions the best. "Are you sure this is a good idea?" asked Sonny in a nervous voice as she and Dilly left the girls' room to meet the boys under Greenhall's twin swords. Sonny lagged sluggishly, and when she did move, it was with heavy feet. "It's the only way," insisted Dilly, prodding her sister along. "You know we tried at least half a dozen times earlier, but every occasion was spoiled by something or other. We can't trust anyone." Sonny had willingly agreed during daylight hours. However, now that the world was quiet and the halls around her were black, it seemed different. Even the clothes she and her sister wore were foreboding. They skulked around in dark outfits with trailing cloaks, in hopes to better hide from possible danger. "You know we'd wait till later if we could," said Dilly, nodding sympathetically. She did her best to convince her sister to stop grumbling. But it was useless. Sonny had changed her mind and didn't want to go. "Even if he does identify the spot," said Sonny, groaning loudly, "will it do any good? How is it going to help?" "It'll work," said Dilly, cracking a smile before concealing it. "If we find where the Dread plans to strike, we can determine what he wants and devise a plan to run him through." Dilly was excited about the possibility of real action, and though she tried to hide it from her sister, it showed on her face. "Oh," sighed Sonny miserably, reading her sister's delight. She could see Dilly was getting wound up like a pack of hounds that had just discovered the scent of a fleeing fox. She moved closer to Dilly, made eye contact, and added hopelessly, "Wouldn't it make more sense to go looking for a person with a scar on his hand?" She knew what she said wouldn't change Dilly's mind.
We will. Don't worry, Sonny," said Dilly. "In order to stop the Dread, we'll follow every lead we can, even the search for a scarred hand." Yet Dodd admitted that the man with the scar wasn't working alone, and who knows which one is the Dread.
"Could you please stop saying the Dread?" pleaded Sonny, pushing hair out of her face. "These glowing rocks don't cast light like candles do. I feel all..." "Ah!" She broke off abruptly with a shriek. "Did I scare you?" choked Boot. He had a hard time saying anything through his laughter. He had hidden his glowing rock under his shirt and then had approached the girls quietly. "You're just lucky I didn't draw my blade," declared Dilly smugly, pulling back her cloak to show off her weapon. It was sheathed and slung at her side.
"You brought a sword?" gasped Boot, admiring it.
The shiny metal of its casing looked magical in the dim light. It was plastered with intricate designs around a beautiful family insignia, and the name Bombu Tilius was etched prominently down the side. "Well," said Dilly gleefully, "you don't think I'm crazy enough to go searching for trouble in the dead of night without equipping myself, do you? Protective gear is a must. Who knows, we might get lucky and find the Dread."
"Oh, I guess so," said Boot, slightly jealous. "Good for you."
Dodd and Buck came trotting up. Their glowing rocks bounced on the chains around their necks. "We've got about an hour," announced Dilly, who had assumed the lead position. "Strat said these things may glow longer, for two or more. But to be safe, we should plan on only one, and that's if you've fully filled them properly."
"How fully?" squeaked Buck, whose rock seemed to glow dimmer than the others.
"I told you Bly's specific routine before you," scolded Dilly. 4 hours of direct sunlight, and then keep it in a lit room." It was obvious Buck hadn't followed her directions very well. "How can Bly get wealthy on gadgets like this?" he moaned, swinging his dimming rock necklace. "They're way too hard to use. Too many instructions. I thought 4 hours of candlelight would be good enough."
"Apparently not," jabbed Sonny. She took part with Dilly in teasing the boys. However, in truth, their arrival bolstered her confidence. They made it seem more like a fun outing, not a search for some bloodthirsty villain.
Boot patted a leather pouch at his side. "Don't worry, Buck. If these things don't work, I've got good old-fashioned Buster candles. They'd light the whole hall for as far as you can see."
"No," insisted Dilly, shaking her head. "Don't bring them. It's too dangerous. We can't have that much light. Leave them here or I'm not going."
"Are you serious?" asked Boot, who couldn't believe her audacity.
"Totally," responded Dilly, putting her foot down. "We have to think before we act. If the dread's at work, he mustn't see us sneaking around. Don't forget who he's already killed. All right, you win, said Boot, giving in quickly. He wasn't afraid of the dark or the dread. He had only brought the candles because they seemed logical. Sonny, on the other hand, turned pale, aghast, when Dilly bluntly mentioned the K-word. She didn't like the thoughts of running into the dread, much less what he could do to them. Are you sure we don't want to bring the candles? Asked Sonny nervously, watching Boot comply with Dilly's request. Boot took his leather pouch off and slid it into the corner of the entry to Green Hall. Trust me, said Dilly confidently. She fidgeted around and then, whoosh, disappeared. See, we can become virtually invisible in the dark if we need to, she said as she pulled a rock out from under her cloak and reappeared on the other side of Dodd. The light is dim enough to stay close to us, yet bright enough to get the job done. Now stop fretting and let's get on our way. We have a basement to check. The group walked the halls quietly. At first it seemed like everyone else was asleep. Nevertheless, as they neared the great hall, it became apparent that that was not the case. Dilly signaled for the stones to be covered, and then they proceeded in darkness, holding hands to stay together. I'd be most pleased if you could, a voice stuttered before being cut off. The dissonant sounds bounced clumsily around the empty corridors and were easily heard. That's why I agreed to help you, said an impatient voice. Now let's grab a snack from the kitchen. I can't ride like this in the middle of the night without having something to eat along the way. I'm dreadful at late hours. You're one lucky little creature waking me up like that. In your clothes? I thought maybe you... I drifted to sleep in my easy chair with some reading and hadn't shifted to bed yet. So yes, I was dressed and ready. Junie's back in Rawl visiting family, you know. Or she would have certainly prompted me to pajamas hours ago. Dilly gasped. She recognized the two men to be Sir Lonk and Zerny, an unusual duo. Quick, whispered Boot. Let's hide over here. He was the center link in the chain of hands, but still managed to pull the group behind a row of chairs, right in front of the kitchen doors. I've never noticed these before, whispered Dilly in amazement. Buck responded in an even quieter voice. That's because you don't spend half of your day thinking about the next meal, like Boot here. Soon the hall lit up with candlelight as Zerny led Sir Lonk to the kitchen. They rummaged around for a few minutes and then swiftly departed the way they came. He's wearing Jilser, exclaimed Dilly, after muffled sounds from the nighttime visitors had completely faded. What? Asked Dodd. Jilser, his fighting sword. Whatever they're up to right now includes trouble. I think we should follow them. Are you crazy? Winced Buck, attempting to climb out from behind the chairs. They're heading off on horseback in the middle of the night. Buck's courage dimmed like his quickly fading light. Besides, he continued, I'm tired and my stone isn't working very well. Maybe tomorrow we can make sure to take naps while giving our rocks their proper soak in the sun, and then go searching the basement halls better prepared. Sonny's light also began to dim, though not nearly as much as Buck's. Let's go back, she said quietly. Dilly stood up and started walking toward the great hall, as if she hadn't heard them. Dodd and Boot followed close behind. Why don't you guys turn in, said Dilly over her shoulder to Sonny and Buck. Go and get some sleep. If something happens to us, you'll need to carry on. It didn't take much convincing. Buck and Sonny offered a good luck and then disappeared rapidly toward their rooms. Dilly, Boot, and Dodd picked up their pace too, in the opposite direction. When they stepped out into the courtyard, moonlight made visibility better. Dodd stared at the unusually large moon. It was much bigger than the one he remembered seeing from Earth. The sky was strange and different. During the day, it was less noticeable because the sun and clouds looked identical to the ones he knew, but seeing a different set of stars made him feel impossibly far away from home. Gazing upward, Dodd started to think about his outings with Pap, when they had studied the constellations together. However, Dilly quickly pulled him back. "Hide your light," she ordered curtly, reaching past Boot to poke Dodd. "I don't want them to see us. It looks like they're heading toward the master barn, over there." Dilly stretched her arm and pointed at two figures jogging in the direction of a large building. She started to move out into the grassy field when Boot grabbed her. "Wait," he said. "Let's stick to the shadows and we'll hide better." He pointed at two rows of trees which followed a road that jutted almost straight from the castle front to the tree-lined half-circle of buildings. It was farther to walk, but the shade would conceal them completely. By the time the threesome made it to the barn, Zerny and Sir Lonk had saddled up and were heading out the other side, with a third rider. Zerny remarked as they left the barn, Thank you, Strat, for coming so quickly. Dilly ran to the stalls, and in a matter of a few short seconds, she emerged riding Song bareback. Boot was still searching for his horse, Grubber. No time, boys, called Dilly. I'm riding after them. You can catch up. But I can't ride Grubber bareback, complained a muffled voice from the darkest part of the barn. I can't even seem to find where they've put him. He's not in his regular stall. And when I do, it'll take me a few clicks to rig him. Dilly slowed her horse momentarily at Dodd's side. Do you want to ride with me or wait for Boot to find his sorry horse? Dodd extended his hand, indicating he would ride with Dilly. He hadn't ridden horses very much, so Dilly's accompaniment was welcomed. His experience at home was limited to a 2-day camping trip in the Uintas with his Boy Scout troop, and even then, they had taken turns riding an old horse named Buttercup. Great, let's be off, Dilly cried. She was in her element, riding bareback on her stallion in the middle of the night, wearing a sword and following trouble. The ride ended up being longer than either of them would have thought, and Boot never caught up. To avoid being detected, Dilly left the highway completely and rode from one lookout point to another, hiding in the shadows, watching for Sir Lonk. He was the only one of the three that carried a torch, and therefore was easy to spot in full moonlight or shade. From one small hill, Dilly and Dodd were close enough to see all three travelers clearly. Zerny leading in the front, Sir Lonk and his torch trailing in the middle, and Strat straggling in the back. Dilly was remarkable on a horse. She kept up with the men, without having so much as a cow trail to chase. She stuck to a line of trees near the top of a ridge that followed the general curve of the road below. The shadows from the trees hid them. Eventually, Zerny left the road and began to meander through a field toward three small tents. Dilly and Dodd watched from a safe distance. Sir Lonk had been right behind Zerny, but stopped on the road near the camp and waited for Strat, who had fallen much farther behind the others. Poor Strat, said Dilly in a soft voice. He's never cared for riding horses. I bet this is his first night ride. Zerny must have really begged to get him out like this. Who do you suppose is in the camp? Dodd had a strange feeling. It's not who is in the camp that worries me, he said. The camp is the bait. The bait, said Dilly, raising her eyebrows. Yes, the camp is the White Hat. Dodd made reference to Uke's masterful display of deception, and Dilly remembered quickly. If the camp's the bait, then where's the enemy? Dodd didn't have an answer. However, the feeling of danger got stronger. He searched the valleys and hills with his eyes. Nothing happened. Song grew impatient as Dilly and Dodd watched intently. Zerny entered the camp, and six men joined him in lighting a large fire. Strat finally caught up to Sir Lonk, and together they rode the last leg. Strange, remarked Dilly. Why are Sir Lonk and Strat staying on their horses? I wonder what they're saying. It's all driving me crazy. I think we need to ride down there. Just as Dilly moved her leg to nudge Song into action, Dodd whispered, Wait! He pointed at a hillside up the same ridge they were currently on. A small outcropping of rocks, 50 feet high, crowned the top of the bluff, directly above the little camp. Look, right there! Dodd pointed below the crown. Dilly surveyed the spot, yet didn't see anything special. I thought I saw something move, said Dodd. Why don't we ride up the ridge farther, at least as far as we can in the shade of these trees? Suddenly, an image flashed in Dodd's mind, like a glimpse of a photograph. It was brief. He saw the faces of a group of drats concealed in bushes, holding bows and arrows. They're hiding at the base of that cliff, down in the rough. Quick, Dilly, cross to the back side of this ridge, then ride as fast as you can. We've got to get above them before they attack. Dilly didn't wait or ask questions. She just rode, convinced by the energy in Dodd's voice. It was only a matter of moments before they reached the rear of the rocky outcropping. We'd better leave Song here, whispered Dilly cautiously. His hooves would clank and give us away. Dodd and Dilly hustled to the top on foot. From there, they could clearly see that Sir Lonk and Strat had dismounted and that Sir Lonk was heading for a tent. He went inside and seemed to be investigating something. His torch made the fabric flicker as he moved around. What do you think he's doing? Said Dilly impatiently. Before Dodd could give an answer, arrows began to fly. They launched from the bushes on the hillside below. Sir Lonk hurried out of the tent and fell over, hit with an arrow. He attempted to crawl away from the attackers with his torch still in hand. Everyone scattered, except Strat. There they are, said Dodd, pointing at some shrubs that were now walking. The enemy had disguised themselves as bushes and were moving swiftly toward the camp, about 100 of them. Oh, no, groaned Dilly, overcome with sorrow. Our friends haven't got a chance. She pointed out that their horses had been frightened before the attack and were some distance down the road, running away. Even Sir Long's sword is no good against an army of men with bows. Strat stood by the fire, fearlessly waiting. He was the only one that didn't run. He held a paddle in one hand and a shield in the other. As arrows flew at him, he swung the paddle, effectively deflecting them, and occasionally he used his shield to block them. "What's Strat doing?" cried Dilly. She was becoming overwhelmed with the view of her friend's last stand. "It's not Balur, Strat. This is war," she sobbed to herself. One of her hands clasped her sword handle, but she didn't draw it. The scene was too hopeless. She almost couldn't bear to watch. Dodd was silent, and when Dilly finally looked toward him, she realized he was gone. "Dodd," she said frantically. "Dodd? Dodd?" He had vanished from her eyes. She nervously walked a few steps down from the top to check on her horse, her escape. Song was standing where she had left him, calmly chewing a mouthful of grass. Suddenly, the ground began to shake. A low groaning noise filled the air. Dilly rushed to the top of the hill just in time to see a wall of rocks and dirt rumble down the other side. It quickly engulfed all of the moving bushes of arrowmen, and fortunately stopped short of the camp. A moment of silence followed. "So, what do you think of that?" said Dodd in a proud voice as he pulled himself up from the front face of the cliff. A cloud of dust filled the backdrop behind him. "You did all of that?" gasped Dilly in shock. Her joy over the rescue of her friends was quickly replacing fear. "Well, I didn't do as much work as the 15-foot log I just used. The secret is leverage. Once big rocks start falling, they generally don't want to stop before they pulverize the heck out of stuff. I lost my tent at scout camp last year over that one." "You say the strangest things, Dodd. But at a time like this, I wouldn't care if you pranced about on fours howling up a willow and claimed to be a dwarsome liver. You did it. You saved them." Dilly rose up and began to wave her arms in the air. The dust was starting to settle, and her friends around the camp were faintly visible. "You can't do that," ordered Dodd, tackling her to the ground. "We have to get out of here before someone sees us." "What do you mean?" asked Dilly, confused. "We just beat the terrible ones. Who else is left but our friends?" "Probably whoever planned this," responded Dodd adamantly. "Don't you see? It was a setup. Someone wanted them dead, and maybe that someone is still down there, watching you wave and waiting to target us as well." Dodd and Dilly crouched on the bluff behind a little shrub. They accounted for the men one by one. The last person to make it back into camp was Zerny, and he wasn't walking. Apparently, he had managed to escape on a horse, while the other men had remained stranded for the slaughter. It was suspiciously reminiscent of another attack, when he had unhitched the whole team and ridden to safety. "Zerny looks fine," remarked Dodd in an agitated voice. Dilly knew just what he meant. "Well, he is a horseman," she said in a less than convincing manner. "He's quite a master with them. Maybe his responded to a whistle when the others bolted." Regardless of Dilly's allegiance, when Zerny rode close to the fire and looked up at the rock outcropping, the exact spot where Dilly and Dodd lay hiding, it was time to take Dodd's advice and race to Twistyard before risking the outcome of getting caught. Back at the barn, Boot was waiting to greet them. The morning sky was just starting to get light in one corner, and the roosters were waking up. "Did you see what they were doing?" asked Boot excitedly as he rolled out from under a pony blanket. He had spent the night on a pile of hay. "We did," answered Dilly coldly. "No thanks to you." She was mad that he hadn't come along, even though he couldn't have done anything. Her real problem was lack of sleep. It made Dilly irritated at everyone. "I would have come," defended Boot, "but my horse is gone. Look for yourself. By the time I realized Grubber was missing, I knew it was too late to follow on someone else's. You were already at least 20 minutes out." Dilly joined Boot in walking up and down the barn, this time with a candle, searching all 200 stalls, only to discover that Boot's horse was missing. Meanwhile, Dodd occupied himself in the darkness. "What in the slickers are you doing to Song?" asked Boot as he neared Dodd with the light. He stared, dumbfounded. "My horse!" shouted Dilly, brewing with anger. "I'll have to order him scrubbed first thing. Whatever caused you to abuse my dear Song after he walked all night for you? Some thanks." Dodd had taken an old rag and was using it to rub manure on the stallion, especially on his legs and hooves. He also mopped sweat off the horse. "We've got to make him look like the rest to hide our identity," said Dodd. He spoke with confidence, though he sheepishly oozed concern from his wearied face. "The clay and dust could have easily given us away, at least if someone took the time to check." Dilly didn't seem to buy Dodd's reasoning, but Boot caught on. "You're right," he said. "If we hit a few others, Song won't stand out." The job was disgusting. Nevertheless, Boot didn't want trouble to come knocking, as it often did for him, so he grabbed a rag and began to help. Dilly sleepily watched. She had done more of the work riding than Dodd, and was extremely exhausted. Her glazed eyes said it all. Boot and Dodd worked frantically at the task and managed to wipe half a dozen horses before a noise made them freeze. A rider was coming toward the barn at a gallop. "Quick, let's be off," whispered Boot, poking Dodd to get his attention. Both boys ran to the other end of the barn and out the door. They barely escaped meeting the visitor. It was close. Too close. "We forgot about Dilly," said Dodd. "Didn't she already head back to her room?" asked Boot. Neither of them knew for sure. They sat outside, hidden behind the weed-infested wheels of an old wagon, listening carefully. "Dilly," said a gruff voice, "why are you sleeping out here?"
"Oh, sleeping," said Dilly tiredly, following a long yawn. "I was just about to head back in. I came to check on my horse. Had a bad dream last night and couldn't rest till I saw him. It looks like the poor beast spent half the night lying down. I hope he's not sick. Will you attend to him for me, Jib?"
"When I get some time," he muttered in a cantankerous way, "I've got a few things I need to first straighten out."
"Well, it's good to have you back," said Dilly cheerfully. "I'd better be going. I'll see you around."
Dilly skipped out of the barn and headed for the castle. Boot and Dodd caught up.
"Wow, you sure perk up after a short nap," said Dodd, who was feeling completely drained.
"It's an act," said Dilly in her previous grumpy voice. "We must make people think that everything is normal. Especially..."
Dilly trailed off for a moment. Dodd looked at her and knew what she was about to say. However, he didn't rub it in.
"All right, I'm beginning to think Zerny and Jib are suspicious," she confessed.
"There, I said it. It's probably just the circumstance, and I'm confident they have a logical explanation for everything. Still, we can't risk asking them, not at a time like this."
Boot, Buck, and Sonny were all dying to know what had happened during the night, but Dodd and Dilly went straight to bed, claiming near insanity from lack of sleep and overexhaustion. And they didn't re-enter life until after supper that night. Fortunately, the day's routines were disrupted by a dozen different things, so nobody noticed they were missing.